10. Proverbs chapter 31, starting with verse 10. Tonight we're going to discuss the subject, or continue discussing it. What kind of wife, or how to choose the right kind of wife? What kind of characteristics should she have? What kind of girl should you date? And so forth. I do not think I mentioned this. By the way, let us pray first. Father, bless the teaching of thy word as we open its pages this evening. Amen. All right. I don't think I mentioned this last week, but Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31, is an acrostic. Did I mention that last week? It is an acrostic. Now, how many of you know what an acrostic is? Well, a few of you do. I do not know whether I can define it or not. I'll try. An acrostic is a piece of literature where the first letter in each line reading down gives a message or says something. My mother discovered an acrostic written by her grandfather to her mother. That's right, isn't it, Mom? Her mother discovered it. It was an acrostic written by my great-grandfather to my grandfather. And her name, let's see, your mother's name was Eugenia. Eugenia Price, is that right? No, not Price. That's the writer. Eugenia Frazier. And reading down, taking the first letter of each line, reading down, the words said Eugenia. It's a tremendous piece of literature. I'm going to bring it one of these days. In fact, I may put it sometime an insert in the bulletin or something. But an acrostic is that kind of literature. Now, Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31, is an acrostic. It begins in the original language. Each line begins with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. For example, verse 1, the first word begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet and continue on down through verse 31 with the next letter. Now, like we'd have, for example, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Well, the Hebrew alphabet, the first letter in each line represents the next in succession of the Hebrew alphabet. And so in the original language, it is an acrostic. Now, that's enough for that. Now, let's see what kind of a woman you ought to marry. How many unmarried fellows here tonight? Unmarried, let's say, teenage and unmarried. That's pretty old not to be married. But you're in your teenage, you're a teenager or above, but not married. Would you raise your hand, please? All the fellows? Okay. How many of you like to get a real, gin-dandy, good, perfect little lady to be your wife someday? Would you raise your hand, please? How many just settle for most anything you can get? All right. Some of you did. But now, the four things it'll do. In the first place, it will teach you young fellas the kind of lady or the kind of a girl to look for in a wife. It'll teach you young ladies teach the young men the kind of young lady to look for. It'll teach the young ladies the kind you ought to be to set your trap for him. And it'll teach you men the kind of boys to rear and you ladies the kind of girls to rear. And so each of us is affected by the subject, how to choose, or what kind of wife you ought to choose, or how to choose the right kind of a wife. Now we're going to start with verse 10, because that's where we start the discussion of the virtuous woman. And I'll give you a list of things for which you ought to look as you seek a wife. Who can find a virtuous woman? Now, I'm going to start anew tonight. We gave some things last week, but I'm going to just ask you to list these now. And if I were a young man here, I certainly would write these down. And if I were a young lady, I certainly would write these down too, because this is what you ought to be as a young lady. Well, that's the first thing, is clean. Who can find a woman? The word virtuous there, of course, means clean, so I would say clean. I would marry a young lady who was clean. If I were a young man, I would stay clean for that young lady. But, of course, one of the first and foremost things that any young lady ought to be is clean, virtuous, pure, chaste, and so forth. Now, the word virtuous has a dual meaning here, and actually here's what it says. Who can find a clean and an intelligent woman? A clean and an intelligent woman, or a clean-intelligent woman. So the second thing I would write down is intelligent. Intelligent. I would only go with clean girls. Let me say this too. I would not go with anybody regularly unless I thought she would be a good prospect for a wife. If she's not the kind you ought to marry, she's not the kind you ought to go with. Did you hear that? If she's not the kind you ought to marry, she's not the kind you ought to go with. And I would not go or even date the kind of girl that I would not want to be the mother of my children. So, boys, first look for a clean girl, And second, look for an intelligent girl. Now, by intelligent, I do not think she has to be a Rhodes Scholar. I do not think she has to be a valedictorian. I do think she ought to have some kind of intelligence. So, young lady, if I were you, I would seek to become an intelligent young lady. You dumb blondes, you dumb brunettes, you dumb redheads, there's no merit in being a dumb blonde. Now, let me say again, I do not think that a girl ought to be as smart as a man. In fact, I never saw a girl that I thought was as smart as a man. But I say that without any prejudice whatsoever. I'm not saying that you ought, but I am saying you ought to have some kind of an intelligence. You ought to know, for example, that Roosevelt is not still the president. You ought to know that that Mr. Wallace is no longer governor of Alabama. Now, these basic things you ought to know. I think that every young lady ought to acquaint herself with knowledge and ought to be as intelligent as possible. I think it's good, and I'll get down to this after a while, but I think it's good for a young lady to learn to be a good conversationalist. Did you know, after you get married, you're not going to sit across the breakfast table and rub noses? Are you, Ken? Did you rub noses this morning at the breakfast table? No. So, now, they just got married. Did you know that Gucci Goo is going to run, after you say that so long, you've got to have something else to say. Did you know that? Or did you know that Popsy Wobbsy loves Momsy Womsy? Did you know that after that's been said a few years, that there must be something else to be said in the conversation? And you'll be surprised. You say to your wife across the breakfast table, I sure am glad the Republicans got the 46 seats in the House. And she says, yeah, I don't like the Republicans or the Senators or the Pharisees either. I just don't. Now, did you know that that's not the kind of gal you ought to get? Choose somebody that is intelligent. When you say something to her about the common average things that everybody ought to know, she ought to be able to discuss it with some degree of intelligence at least. Now, how should you get that way? I would suggest, young ladies, that you read the newspaper. I would suggest that everybody read the newspaper. I do not mean just the Batman, if he's still in the newspaper, or Blondie, if she's still there. I haven't read the funny papers in so long. I just don't read the funny papers. Not against them, but I just don't read them. I would suggest that every young lady, for example, I think you ought to read the editorials. I think you ought to read the front page. But you say, I just never have like that. They have a word, something they call. No, I won't go into that. But anyway, that's a good way to say he got away. If I were you, I would try to know the things he knows. If he loves sports, I'd read the sport page. I'd know that the Dodgers play baseball. And that the Bears, the Chicago Bears, play football. I would know that the left tackle was a player. You ask the average girl who plays left tackle, and she says, I haven't seen a hockey game lately. I just don't know. And so I would suggest that you have every person ought to have a well-rounded knowledge. Good vocabulary. I don't think you ought to necessarily be able to explain the gold standard and explain how to balance the national budget, but I do think you ought to know something about the national budget. And so what could you read? You could read the newspaper. I also think that everybody would be well to read the Reader's Digest or News or Time or U.S. News and World Report, which I think is better than any of the aforementioned except Reader's Digest. I think every young lady ought to become somewhat intelligent on general subjects of conversation. For example, how many of you, don't answer me, but how many of you girls could tell me tonight to locate Vietnam on the map? Don't raise your hand. Yeah, I do. How many, I may ask you to do it. Huh? I give you a hint. It's close to Nebraska. How many of you girls could locate Vietnam on the map? All right, put your hands down quickly. How many of you married ladies could do it? You don't have to be smart because you already got your man. But what's the Vietnam issue all about? Now, I don't mean you ought to know all of the history of Vietnam and the history of its wars and all the officials in the cabinet of Vietnam, the leaders and so forth. But what's it all about? What's the purpose? What's the war about? I think you ought to know at least a basic, good, substantial foundation of knowledge about general subjects. So, fellas, I would marry an intelligent lady. All right, now let's go further. Verse 11. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. All right, circle the word trust. And number three, what to look for in a wife. Number three, and that is someone with whom you can trust and counsel. Now, the word trust here is more than just to trust her. A trust and counsel. Someone whom you can counsel. Now, let's suppose, for example, that you have an offer for a new job. Let's suppose that you have an offer for a job somewhere else that has great opportunities. You come home and you say to your wife, "Now, I have an opportunity for a job. What do you think about it?" And she says, "Where do you work now?" Now, you'd be surprised how close I am. It would shock you how close I am to reality. If you knew how little. Listen, I have asked people. A fella asked me tonight. I wouldn't dare tell you who he is. But a fella asked me tonight if the Indiana election for senators wasn't in May. I said, no, they were yesterday. Now, this ignoramus, this stupid fella. But anyway, I won't go into it because a dear friend of mine. And he may be somewhere up here on the platform. I don't know. But anyway, I don't look this way. You know they're in June, huh? By the time you learn they're in August. But anyway, it's a good idea to know something enough where you can counsel with your husband as a wife. Now, trust, it means that doesn't mean you trust. Of course, you ought to trust your wife that you wouldn't run around with somebody else. Of course, you ought to trust your wife to be faithful to you. I mean, that's all understood, but it means more than that. It means someone whose counsel you can trust, someone whose opinion that you can trust, someone whose ideas you have confidence in. This is the kind of person. Now, I'm not saying, again, you ought to marry a genius. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you have to know everything about everything. I do think you ought to know a little bit about everything. A little bit about everything. So, the heart of her husband does faithfully trust and counsel in her or with her so that he shall have no need of spoil. Now, verse 12. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now then, I want you to write down the fourth thing, and that is, choose a girl who will live for you. Choose a girl who will live for you. Her purpose in life is to be your wife and do you good and not evil all the days of her life. Now, I want you to notice the word evil there, and I want you to circle it, please, because it means a little more than just evil. Here's what it means. Not any evil, or unmixed good. Let me read it now with that in it. She will do him unmixed good and not any evil all the days of his life. The word good means unmixed good. The word evil means not any evil. It doesn't mean she'll do more good than bad. It doesn't mean she'll do 90% good and 10% bad. It means the right kind of wife will do him no evil, not any evil, and unmixed good all the days of his life. That means, ladies, that means, wives, your job is your big purpose in life. Your big consuming job is to help your man and to do him good and not evil all the days of his life. Now, that means that, fellas, you ought to marry somebody who is in love. Now, I don't like the words in love because they've been cheapened and rubbed in the filth of the world so much. But in the true sense, in love. Now, I want to say a word about this matter. My wife doesn't like me to talk like this because she does, but I'm going to talk like it anyway. This is what I want to say. You know why I love my wife? She doesn't like this. I love her because the Bible says the husband's supposed to love his wife. Now, hold it. That is the best reason to love your wife. And that's the kind of fellow that'll love his wife 10 years from now, too. Now, wait a minute. I love my wife. Now, that's love. I love her because men of character love their wives. And don't you come to me and say, "I just don't love her anymore." I don't want to hear that kind of rot. You get right with God and you will love her. And you ladies that come to me with this look like a pigeon just been hit by a .22 rifle falling off the roof. And say, "I just don't love him anymore." Don't you come to me with that kind of stuff. Bible says, love your husband. Love you. And God never did ask you or command you to do anything you could not do if you got right with God. Now, I love my wife because God said I'm to love my wife. And I love her because God said. Now, wait a minute. I love her more than most people love their wives, though, because of what she is. You see, the existence, now you like that better, don't you? The existence of the love is because of character. The degree of the love is because of the object. You see what I mean? I've often said, people who have character love people not because of the object, but because of the lover. The condition of the heart determines whether you love. The condition of the object determines how much love. Now, Paul said we're supposed to love everybody, but then he would turn around and say, I love some of you more than do others. Wonder why? Tell you why. Because he loves everybody because God says love everybody. But he loves some more than others because they're more lovable than others. You see? So I'm simply saying that a husband ought to love his wife and a wife ought to love her husband. And now this I'm saying. You ought to choose someone who loves you and who is in a spiritual sense in love with you. And someone who is, and I use this word carefully and sacred. And sacredly or with sobriety. And that is, you ought to choose someone who is warm and affectionate toward you. Now, I'm not talking about someone that kiss you goodnight every night. God pity that kind of a in-love business. I'm talking about someone who loves you, and it's obvious she loves you, and you can feel the warmth that God has given her for you. You ought to choose someone whom you feel, young men, will make her life you. Now, I've said before, a man's life or business is his vocation. A woman's business and her vocation is her man. Did you hear me? You ladies might be good bank executives, but if you're not a good wife, then your vocation, you're a flop. A woman's vocation is her man. God made Adam to till the garden. He made woman take care of Adam and love Adam and encourage Adam. So I would choose someone that will do you good. So write that down if you want to, that someone that will do you good and not any evil. Not any evil. Someone whose supreme desire in life and who will live just to do you good. Now let me give you an example. You're going with a girl. And so, you get a new suit of clothes. She hasn't had a new dress for a while. Her folks didn't buy her one. And you go by together and you take her on a date and she looks and says, oh, you lucky dog, you always get new clothes. I'd buy her a milkshake right quick and take her home. If she can't rejoice with you because of good that happens to you and not to her, she's not a good risk for marriage. If she's not the kind that obviously would rather you have something than her, than she, she's not a good risk for marriage. I would not choose anyone unless it was obvious they were in love with me, they would do me not one bit of evil. Not one bit of evil. But only good. Unmixed good and not any evil. And someone that was obviously warm and affectionate. Let me say this, ladies, and I say this to you, those of you that are married too. But did you know that men, now when I say affection, I'm not talking about hugs and kisses. I'm not talking about lover's lane. I'm not talking about midnight smooching. I'm not talking about necking and petting. I'm talking about the way decent people make love before they marry. By warmth and affection, I mean heartfelt love. First place, a girl that'll try to steal your purity, she doesn't know what love is. And a boy that'll try to steal your purity, he doesn't know what love is. Look, I love her so much, I just need to hold her in my arms all the time. That's not love, that's sex. That's lust. But you say, I love her so much, I'm going to see to it that she's treated like a lady. I'm going to see to it that she's treated gentlemanly. I'm going to see to it that I treat her like I'd want somebody to treat my sister. I love her too much to satisfy my own passions at the risk of her losing that which she ought to have. I love her too much. Why, you boys that won't go with a girl that won't kiss you goodnight, you're not worth a salted take to, I mean, the powder take to blow you. You can't blow salt up. The powder take to blow you up. That is, if they don't go with her, she won't even kiss you goodnight. Little lady, if you let me know that he dropped you, we'll have a party. And in congratulation, because you lost that bum. I'm talking about warmth and affection. I'm talking about tenderness. I'm talking about Christian love. So, choose someone who will do you good and not evil. all the days of your life, and someone warm and affectionate who loves you and will live for you. All right, verse 13. Let's keep looking at this gal. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. All right, write this down. The next number, the kind of wife, choose someone that's not a wallflower. Choose someone that's not a wallflower. She worketh willingly with her hands. Choose someone that knows how to work and likes to work. You say, well, how am I going to know if she likes to work or not? Okay, how much work does she do for her mama right now? And let me say it another way. Look, see how much work her mama does right now, too. I say it again. If I were a young man looking for a wife, I would give her mother the civil service examination. You like that? If I were a young lady looking for a husband, I'd look at his dad. You see, how much hair his dad's got is what you're going to have 20 years from now. You should have taken that consideration, honey. My dad didn't have much hair when he died. But I'd look at him. I'd watch the man. Listen, 99 times out of 100, the young girl is going to be much like her mother. And the boy is going to be much like the dad. Funny thing. My sister and mother say this about me so often, though my dad was not a Christian. If my dad had not had weakness for one or two vices, he would have been one of the most tremendous fellows that ever lived. That's right, isn't it, Arlene? Dad was a tremendous fellow. He was weak. He didn't have resistance from temptation, one or two directions. But I see, even the strength, weaknesses too, I see, and Mother Arlene said this, they see Dad in me so much. I say sometimes to my wife, come on, kid. And that's what Dad called Mother, was kid. Called her kid. A kid is a little goat, you see. But he always called her kid. I catch myself sometimes calling Mrs. House kid. So many things. So look, young ladies, you look at the fellow's father, and men, young men, you look at the mother. If I were to say one important thing about choosing a wife, I would say, look at the mother. Look at the mother. Look at the mother. All right, let's go. Well, let's see, I was on this thing about she works hard. And look, did you know that a Gucci goo before with no breakfast is not much fun? Did you know I love you, Boopsie, on if you're not going to get an empty stomach? Did you know that? I mean, I believe I'd rather just do out the Boopsie and have the aching and eggs. The bacon and eggs. I believe I have. I'm simply saying that be sure that you choose the young lady who worketh willingly with her hand. She's industrious and not lazy and not a wallflower. Okay, let's go down to the next one. This next one's interesting. She is like the merchant ships. Now, I do not know exactly what this means. But the next I do. She bringeth her food from afar. Now, I've checked into this, and this means she's thrifty. She's thrifty. Choose a thrifty wife. A thrifty wife. Fellas, when you take her out to the ice cream parlor, check carefully what she orders. Check carefully. If she says a banana split, watch her. Her mother's probably fat. But watch her. Choose someone that's thrifty. I've said before, I made a poll a few years ago about what caused divorces. Among the people who came to me for counsel and advice, and these four things caused every divorce that I have ever seen myself and with whom I was counsel. One, finances. Finances. I believe that more divorces are caused by financial difficulties than most any other single thing. You folks know what I'm talking about. When you get in a financial strain and you're having a hard time making ends meet, I'm sure you realize the tremendous strain upon romance this brings. So choose someone that's thrifty. The second thing, and I'll just give you these because I've gotten into it, the second thing is in-law trouble. In-law. The third thing is spiritual By that I mean not going to church, not reading your Bible, not having family devotions, not praying, not saying grace at the table. And the fourth thing is your love life, your physical love life. Now, these four things cover all divorces as far as I'm concerned. I was watching. No, I wasn't. I was listening. I was driving on a long-distance trip, and I turned on the Art Linkletter House Party. I think for the most part, he's not a bad fella. I'm trying to put my approval a little bit on him. I think he's not a bad fella. I think there's some questionable things maybe occasionally, but I think in general he's one of the better of the radio and television performers. But there was a marriage counselor as a guest that day, and the marriage counselor said, there are four things that cause most divorces. And I thought, well, let me hear what they are and see how close we are. So he mentioned three of my four, almost in direct order. Finances, in-laws, and love life. He didn't mention the spiritual part. But I thought, now, that's interesting that he would say that. That means that a preacher says it and a counselor says it. That means that it's important that a family not get in trouble financially. Choose someone who is thrifty. All right, let's go further. Verse 15, she riseth also while it is yet night and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. Now, I don't know how you can find out about this quality, this characteristic, but to those who are married, let me tell you what it means. It is talking about when folks used to get up early in the morning, go out and work in the fields. Now, occasionally, I've done this as a kid, not a great deal, but occasionally when I'd go down to Uncle Roy's farm and so forth. But how many of you ever worked in the fields and you worked back in the days when you got up before the sun came up? It was still dark when you got up, and by the crack of dawn, you were already in the field. How many of you have done that? Oh, many of you have. Well, that's exactly what it's talking about here. These men would go out and work in the field. Now, this lady, the virtuous lady, would get up before the men got up. Now, they got up before it was daylight. Before it was daylight, I mean, it was still dark, they got up. But before they got up, she got up and prepared their breakfast. Now I want to say this tonight to married people. This is not to the unmarried, but I want to say it to married people. I think you miss a great deal in your home if the wife and the family does not eat breakfast when they get together in the morning. In fact, I think you miss a great deal if you do not eat all of your meals together. There's one time where the family can be together, and God knows in these busy days the families need to get together. And there's one time the entire family can get together. We all have one thing in common. That's about all that most families have in common. And we have a daughter nearly 15 and a daughter of 6. And these are the extremities of our age level, our house, from 6 to nearly 15. Now, that means that there's a wide span. Becky wants to get a book on hairstyles. David wants to get a book on baseball. Becky wants to go to a slumber party. David wants to go to a ball game. Cindy wants to play house and so forth. Now, this great variety of interest in a family means that there are not many things we can do together. But there's one thing that I've noticed that Becky, David, Linda, and Cindy all have in common. When their elbow bends, their mouth opens. Now, I've noticed that just like it all the time. All right, now if that be the case, that means that each of our children enjoys eating. Then here's something we can do together. I think you do your family an injustice, mothers, if you don't get up. Well, you say, my husband said he doesn't want to. You do it anyway. Well, my husband likes to cook. Get up and help him. The truth is, he has to like to cook. He didn't used to like to cook. But that first morning when he woke up, I looked over and said, it's time for breakfast. You got up and said, who are you? He said, go back to bed. And so the next morning, my wife sometimes tries so hard. I come in late at night, 2 o'clock in the morning from preaching, and she so does want, to me, there's nothing worse than a dark house at night and you come in late. And she so does want to make me feel welcome. And she gets up and she's like, I was a servant. I could have said, it was a funeral, we had a funeral, and she could have said, oh, I'm sorry. I mean, she wouldn't know the difference. She tries so hard. But now, in the morning, you get up like that, and the old man looks at you, and you come down, and I think I'd lose my appetite, too. But now, if you'd get up before he does, and have breakfast for him, and and at least look a little better than you did when you got up. Some improvement. So the morning my wife said to me, she got up right quickly, fixed breakfast, and she said, "I'm going to look better when you come home this afternoon." I said, "I know it. I know." And she said, "I couldn't look any worse, could I?" I said, "You said it." But I am saying this. I'm saying if a wife would get up first. And I don't mean you have to prepare like you're going to a wedding. I don't think you have to put on your makeup and your best Sunday dress. But at least make a little improvement and prepare breakfast and have the family together. Well, you said, "My kids, I don't want to get up and eat breakfast." Okay, then there's a certain place on them where a whack right across will take care of that. And two or three of them with a paddle, a ping pong paddle will do, or one of these little bolo things, that'll take care of it. Two or three of those real hard will make them want to get up very quickly, and they can come down to the table. And I think that, now you said, "Preacher, don't speak the Bible." I am preaching the Bible, and I've got my finger right now on what causes more homes to break up than a lot of things we think more spiritual. We just don't know each other. Now look, here's the average schedule. Dad gets up, maybe Mom, grabs a cup of coffee, has the newspaper over here, and drinks his paper and reads his coffee. You know how it is. And when he gets through this coffee, he runs off, and then Mother sets the table maybe, and she reads the paper a while. And then pretty soon, here comes Susie. She goes to high school. She has to get up earlier than Johnny. So here comes Susie, and she runs down, and she grabs a bowl of cereal and pours it out and gets the banana and cuts the banana up and pours some milk on it, and then she sprinkles some sugar over it. Doesn't even get the spoon. Just sprinkles it with the sugar bowl over it, and she eats, and while she's doing, she's getting her homework for the day. And here comes Johnny down, and he says, "I don't want the cereal. All I want is a piece of toast." Gets a piece of toast. He makes him a piece of bread, puts butter on it, makes him a piece of toast, eats a piece of toast, drinks glass of milk, and one at a time, they come down. That's no way to live. That's no way to live. Now, I think that a mother ought to get up and prepare breakfast. And I think that she ought to have a decent breakfast. And I think that the family ought to come. And I think the same way at lunch and the same way at dinner or supper, whatever you eat at 6 o'clock at night. I think the same way. The family ought to eat together. There's so little we have in common until we need to seize every opportunity possible to have some time to spend with the family. All right. Now let's go down to verse 16. "She considereth the field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard." Now I have this here, and I'm going quickly now for a few verses. Choose a woman who is wise. A woman who is wise. Here's a lady who planteth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She's wise. She considers. She knows the kind of field to buy. She weighs the bargain. She tries to spend her money wisely, and so she is a wise person. Verse 17, "She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms." Now, that does not mean that she plows or she digs ditches. What it really means in the original, this is strength. She does exercises. That's what it really means. Now, I'm not saying you ought to choose a woman that does exercises. But what it really means is this. She has good health habits. She has good health habits. You thought you were supposed to choose a chick because she is a doll, didn't you? No, these chicks who are dolls can become chicks again, or hens. No, that's not it. Now, I do think, and I'm going to get down in a few minutes, to where I think a woman ought to be attractive. And I think you ought to choose someone whose appearance you can be proud of. But I also think that we ought to use these practical suggestions. Choose someone with good health habits. Did you know that the woman whom you marry will be the mother of your children? And you ought to choose the kind of person that will have healthy children? Now, someone that has good health habits. That means I wouldn't consider marriage with a girl that smokes cigarettes. Wouldn't even think about it. If she says she'll quit, okay, I let her quit for about 10 years, then consider marrying her. You'd be surprised how many folks come to my office and say, "Brother Hiles, I'm going to marry so-and-so." "Well, how about, did you drink?" "Yeah," you think, "but he said you'll quit." Sure, I've heard that old song and dance. Haven't you? "He says you'll quit." You know, he says, now he doesn't want to be pushed into joining a church. But as soon as we get married, we're going to get the same religion together. I've heard that stanza too. "Brother,
That is as shallow as what the politicians said they're going to do after they got elected. He's campaigning to get you, honey. And when he gets you, listen, if he won't go to church with you before you marry while he's in love with you, forget it after you marry. If he won't quit his drinking before you marry while he's trying to get you and while the campaign's on, he's not about to quit it after you get married. Now, I would not choose a man that drinks. By drinking, I mean drinks one drop of anything that's got alcohol in it. Beer, whiskey, wine, martini. A little lady the other day said to me, talking in my office, I said, does your fiancé drink? No, neither of us drink. Well, I said, what do you do when you go to the country club? They belong to the country club. What do you do when you go to the country club and before the meal when they bring the cocktails? Oh, we drink that. But we don't drink. Well, I said, what is it, Christian? How do you get it? What do you do with it? You see, the truth is, I wouldn't marry a lady that smoked one cigarette in the first place. I'll tell you what, Dr. Rice says, I'd hate to catch the smell of camel every time I kissed a woman. I do not know. I do not know how you men that have these smoking wives can stand a kiss. And I'll go a step further. I don't know how you ladies can stand it either. With all of this, with this huffing and puffing in your face, look like a snorting bull coming at you. I don't know. Maybe you can. I can't figure it out. I'm simply saying I would choose someone who has good health habits. I'd choose a young lady that does not smoke, does not drink. I would choose someone that is not a glutton. I would choose someone whose health, who does her best to have good health, and will in turn try to influence the children the same. All right, down to verse 18. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good, her candle goeth not out by night. In other words, she keeps the light on at night in case the children need her. That's the kind. Let me ask you a question. Who fed the baby the first week? Who fed the baby the first week? That'll answer a lot of questions. What kind of... Did she want you to have your rest? I think you ought to have wanted her to have her rest too. I choose the kind of a mate that would want to be considerate of other people. You know, I never have gotten adjusted yet to getting anything and not working for it or paying for it. My wife will tell you that this is the truth. My wife, when I get up from a meal, it's the hardest thing in the world for me not to want to help with the dishes or do them myself. Now, I do not mind doing the dishes. It is not exactly what I had planned for my life's work. But I do not mind doing them. But there's something inside of me that says I ought to help. And if there's any work to be done, I ought to be. And my wife will tell you, shake your head if it's true, she'll tell you that more times than not, when I get up and I say, honey, could I do the dishes today? Could I do the dishes for you? And more times than not, no, she doesn't either. But more times, I say that. Now why? Because there's something inbred. Look, there is, by the time a child is 10 years of age or maybe earlier, his character's already decided. And when you get saved, you don't necessarily get character. You get character at the feet of people that have character to teach it to you. You don't get character because you're saved. I know some fellows got saved. God may help them quit drinking, but that won't give them character. The kind of young lady I'd want to marry if I were you is the kind of young lady she would want to be the kind to let you, or she'd want to be think of you and others and the children, and her candle goeth not out but night. I mean, she's always there to jump up and do her part. Let me do it. I want to do it. That's the kind of young lady that makes a good wife. Now, in verse 19, she layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. Now, I won't go into that, except to say it's sort of like she sews and mends the clothes and takes care of repair work and so forth, clothing wise. Young ladies, if I were you, if there's a course in cooking in school, I'd take it. If I had an elective and it was a course in sewing, I'd take the course in sewing. Funny thing, young ladies will take voice and not cooking. Now, I don't know what. I can buy a record for a solo, but I think I'd rather have a gal that can cook. I would take all the home economics that I could, and I'd help my mother, and I'd find recipes, and I'd learn how to cook. And when I got married, I wouldn't have to make my husband eat dried beans and mashed potatoes all the time. I'd be sure that I knew how to cook, and that I knew how to, if I could, I'd take sewing if I could. And this lady, she laid her hand to the spindle. In other words, she takes care of the needs of her household. And here's a beautiful verse in verse 20. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. She reacheth forth her hand to the needy. There's two different actions here. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. She reacheth forth her hand to the needy. One hand is stretched to the poor. Both hands are reached to the needy. Let me read what it really says. She stretcheth out her hand to the general poor. She reacheth forth her hands to the afflicted poor. The afflicted poor. Here's a person that's having a little tough time and not making ends meet. She stretches out her hand to him or to her. Here's a person that's afflicted, really having it bad. Hard time. Sickness has come. She reacheth out her hands to that kind of a person. I can still recall my mother. Maybe we discussed this before. But I was reared back in the Depression days. And we didn't have much to eat. Now, when I say we didn't have much, I mean we didn't have much to eat. When I was 10 years old, I saw a family across the street eat pimento cheese, and I didn't know what it was. The Coulters. And my sister was a friend of Margaret Coulter, and she got to go over every Saturday night and eat pimento cheese sandwiches with the Coulters. And Mother and I would sit over there and wish we could go. Pimento cheese. That's the truth. But I can recall this. I can recall back in the old days, out there on Ann Arbor, way out there, where we had the dog, you know, the big dog that took Carlene to school every morning, to the bus every morning, and walked back and met her at the bus. Actually did. Walked her to the bus, and then left her, came back, and then when it's time for school, for her to get out, to get off from school, the dog, what was his name? Pal. He was a German police dog. And Pal would go back and meet her at the bus 2 miles away and walk back with her. We lived out there. My mother would say, now, Earlene, look out for tramps. We used to call them tramps. Look out for tramps. Because there were a lot of people in those days that were hungry and would go from house to house begging food. Now, here's a strange thing. One of them would come and he'd knock on the back door, and Mother would lock the door. He'd either chop wood or go or do something, mow the yard, do something. Mother never gave him anything to eat. Never would. Never gave anybody anything to eat that had two hands. She'd make him work. And while she would fetch something for him, he'd work. He'd earn it. And we may not have much, but she'd share it with him. And then what she'd do, she'd probably forgotten it. She'd open the, when you're way out there, she'd look carefully. She was always scared of her shadow. And she'd look out and she'd see him. And so she'd open the screen right quick and stand down on the porch and lock the screen right quick and say, here it is! She'd never hand it to him. She'd always open the screen for him, but always giving to the poor. Doesn't matter. Now, we were as poor maybe as they were, but she always shared. Now, the right kind of a lady loves to share with people and with the poor. I would choose someone that had a heart for others. I would choose a wife that could weep over people that were in trouble. I'd choose a wife that was always wanted to help somebody that was in need. I'd try to find a wife that would share with other people and want others to have some of what she has. Now, here's an interesting verse in verse 21. She is not afraid of the snow for her household are clothed with scarlet. And this is an interesting word. Circle the word scarlet. And what it means is double scarlet. Her household, when it snows, her household is clothed with double clothing. What it means is she puts a good warm overcoat on the kids when they go to school. That's what it means. Here's a lady that is careful to think about the needs of the children. Oh, just get whatever you want to wear. I don't care. You ever say that? Mama, what can I wear? Well, you know as much as I do about it. That's really a sweet way to start today, isn't it? That's what the Bible means when it says love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, kindness, goodness. So she covers the children. And here, and this is the last one for tonight, she maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. What does it mean? Think of it now. Here's a real gal. Her arms are strong. She's wise, intelligent. She counsels with her husband and gives him wise counsel. She gets up early in the morning. She cooks breakfast. She considers a field and has wisdom as she chooses it. She sows. She helps her husband. She has strength of body. She's in good health. She does her daily dozen, her exercises. And yet it says, she maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing are silk and purple. What does it mean? It means she dresses ladylike, properly, sweetly. She dresses in a feminine way, and her appearance means something to her. She's strong, but she doesn't wear football clothes or sweatshirt. She has character. Remember the canning days? How many ever, back in the old days, the old canners? I used to, as a kid, used to worry myself sick, afraid the top was going to blow off and blow the whole house up. And remember the old canner? And the seal the jars, and pickles, and preserves, and so forth. All day long, she opens those lids. But when the husband comes home, she's dressed in purple and silk and tapestry. And those arms are strong, but all of a sudden they become weak. And he's been down at the office all day, and he's a weakling himself. So she gets that jar, and she just goes, "Oh, I just can't open it." And he says, "Here, let me have it." "Oh, would you open it for me?" She's open 40 during the day. And she has to open it a little bit so he can do the rest now. You think? So while he's out looking, she opens it so he's able to do it, you know. And then he opens the lid and she says, "Oh my, it's good to have a man around the house. It's good to have somebody strong that can protect me." And he says, "You sure look pretty tonight." And in her beautiful clothing, tapestry, silk and purple, she's as feminine and sweet and loving and warm and affectionate, because she doeth him good and not evil all the days of his life. You know, if I were a young lady, I think I'd rather be that than a movie star. Doesn't that sound to you more like what a life ought to be? Oh, boy. The other night I was in a motel room and I turned on the news, and after the news came off, this old brother, I listened to it about that long. What's his name? He's on late at night. He's a kiddish looking guy, and I'm not trying to catch you, really. What is it?
Carson.
Carson. And he had some old gal as his guest. And she was from Wisconsin. And she came and said, "Hello, darling." And she had a cigarette holder that's four times longer than a cigarette, and way out there. And she'd been out in the rain because her skirt had shrunk. And she came flitting in there. And here's and then she... Why? If I'd have seen that coming at me, I'd have called the police. "Hello, darling." He said, "How've you been?"
"I've been to Paris for Gay Paris."
I bet you she wouldn't know hog jaw from chitlins. She might be awful nice to look at on the screen, but brother, she's terrible to look at breakfast. And if I were you, young ladies, I think I'd want to be one of this kind right here. You see, they get old and they lose that beauty. Who was it the other day I heard about? Oh, Dorothy L'Amour. Well, when I was a kid, she was something. She's always going on the road to somewhere. Remember? And all those roads to Zanzibar and road to Formosa and road to Kentucky and all these roads she's going on. And what happened the other day? She was picked up for for stealing. I mean shoplifting. And her picture's in the paper, and I said, is that that beautiful thing? Oh, it's faded now. It's faded now. Some movie star I heard about says she never gets outside the house anymore. You know why? Because that kind of beauty, when you lose it, you've lost everything. But you look at the beauty of some of these ladies around here tonight. These ladies that have gotten up early and fixed breakfast for a half a century. These ladies that have stood beside a husband, didn't have a lot of money, but he was honest, and he went to work, and he worked hard, and tried to rear a decent family. And these ladies that took the temperature of babies in the middle of the night and gave aspirins and rubbed Vicks on the chest and gave them hot lemonade at night and woke up several times in the night, went and kissed their brow and prayed for God to make the baby well. And they sewed to take care of their clothes, and they kept their house and cooked their meals. And yet they've worked for their husband and loved their husband, and they've been feminine and sweet and loving for him, because she doeth him good and not evil all the days of his life. The lady like that gets around 65 or 70. You know, she begins really to blossom out to real beauty. Did you know that? She really starts getting beautiful. Taking her husband off to work, huh? To me, I'd rather be that when I grow old than a Betty Grable or Lana Turner or Liz Taylor. That's what I want to be. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. This is the kind of gal to get, fellas. The kind of gal to get. Look for her.